All right, so you send us this motion filed by special counsel Jack Smith in the case of United States v. Donald J. Trump.
Right.
And it's about whether Trump can be tried for his alleged role in trying to overturn the 2020 election.
Okay.
And let me tell you, this thing reads like a legal thriller.
It's a fascinating case, no doubt.
Yeah.
What makes this particular motion so compelling is that it really digs into the limits of presidential power and immunity.
Right, because on the surface, you'd think, well, a president can't be charged with a crime while they're in office, right? But this motion is challenging that very idea.
Exactly. It boils down to Special Counsel Smith trying to convince the court that Trump's actions weren't official acts of the presidency.
Okay.
Which would typically grant him immunity. Instead, they're arguing these actions were taken by Trump as a private citizen, specifically as a candidate, trying to overturn the results of an election he lost.
And they're using some pretty specific examples to back that up, right?
Absolutely. The motion lays out a multi-pronged effort by Trump to overturn the election results, focusing on key battleground states. And this isn't just about January 6th either.
Right.
They're alleging this was a campaign that began even before the election took place.
Okay, so set the stage for us.
Sure.
What kind of actions are we talking about here? What did Trump allegedly do?
Well, the motion claims that Trump engaged in a deliberate strategy to undermine public trust in the election process.
Okay.
It started with him making these sweeping claims about the potential for widespread voter fraud, especially with mail-in voting. Remember those claims?
Oh, absolutely. He was all over social media with that, even before a single vote was cast.
Right. And this is a key point.
Okay.
The motion highlights how Trump used his personal Twitter account, Real Donald Trump, to push these claims.
Yeah.
Why use his personal account when he had the official POTUS account?
Good question. It's almost as if he wanted to separate himself from the office, at least for those specific statements.
That's precisely the argument Smith is making.
Yeah.
They're saying this wasn't the president speaking on behalf of the country. It was a candidate trying to sway public opinion in his favor.
So it's all about intent.
Yeah.
They're saying he knew what he was doing and chose to use his personal platform to avoid any official association.
Exactly. And it didn't stop there.
Okay.
Once the election was underway, the motion alleges that Trump targeted specific states he lost, putting pressure on state officials, notably only those from his own party, to overturn the results. We're talking about pressuring them to throw out legitimate votes, to delay certification, even to create these things called alternate slates of electors.
Hold on. Alternate slates of electors. That sounds pretty wild. Can you explain that a bit more?
Sure. Essentially, these were groups of individuals who claimed to be legitimate electors for Trump.
Okay.
Even though he lost the popular vote in those states.
Right.
They were trying to create a parallel election process that would deliver him the electoral votes he needed to win.
Wow. Okay, so we're talking about a coordinated effort to actually subvert the will of the voters?
That's the allegation, and the motion claims that these efforts involved a network of private individuals, campaign staff, even some lawyers, all working outside their official capacities. Again, not acting on behalf of the presidency, but in support of Trump, the candidate.
It's starting to feel like there are two Donald Trumps at play here. The president and the private citizen who just happened to be running for re-election.
That's a really interesting way to put it. And it gets the heart of the legal dilemma at the center of this case.
Okay.
Because if those two entities are distinct, which one is actually immune from prosecution? And can you really separate them when it comes to the actions of a president?
That's what makes this motion so important, right?
Yeah.
It has the potential to set a precedent for how we understand presidential power and accountability for generations to come.
You got it. The stakes are incredibly high, not just for Trump, but for the presidency itself.
And it wasn't just behind-the-scenes maneuvering either, right?
Yeah.
Weren't there also some pretty public examples of Trump trying to influence the election outcome?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And these public actions are a crucial part of the prosecution's argument. Take that speech Trump gave in Georgia on January 4th, 2021, just days before the 6th.
Oh, yeah. The one that was basically a greatest hits reel of all his election fraud claims.
Exactly. The motion actually quotes this speech extensively.
Okay.
Because it really exemplifies their point.
Yeah.
This wasn't a policy speech
right.
or the president addressing the nation. This was a campaign-style rally.
Yeah.
Aimed at rallying his base and casting doubt on the election's legitimacy.
And remember all the specific claims he made? Things like dead people voting or more ballots cast than actual voters. I mean, it was pretty outlandish stuff.
Right. Like when he claimed there were 11,000 more ballots than there were voters in Georgia.
Yeah.
Or that More than 2,500 ballots were cast by individuals whose names and dates of birth match incarcerated felons in the same state.
Wow.
These were very specific accusations presented without evidence, and they fed the narrative that the election was stolen.
And the motion argues that this kind of rhetoric coming from the president himself went far beyond simply questioning the results. They're saying it was a deliberate attempt to incite his supporters and interfere with the peaceful transfer of power.
Precisely. And this is where that concept of intent becomes so important.
Right.
It's one thing for a private citizen to make these kinds of claims. But for the president to use his platform in this way, it raises serious questions about abuse of power.
Especially when you consider that he had access to official channels to challenge the results if he had legitimate concerns. He could have pursued legal avenues, requested recounts, that sort of thing. But instead, he chose to go this more public and some might say more inflammatory route.
Exactly. And that distinction between official channels and personal actions is key to the prosecution's case.
Okay.
They're drawing a clear line between Trump's role as president and his actions as a private citizen pursuing a specific goal, overturning the election outcome.
Okay, so we've got the tweets, the rally speech. What about all the pressure he put on Mike Pence to interfere with the electoral vote count? That's going to be a big part of this, right?
It is, and it's arguably the most legally complex aspect of the entire case. Because as you might remember, the Supreme Court already weighed in on this issue to a certain extent.
They did. What did they say?
They ruled that Trump talking to Pence about his role in certifying the election was considered official conduct.
Okay.
Because it fell under Pence's duties as vice president.
Right.
However, and this is a crucial however, the prosecution in this case is arguing that this particular situation was different.
Okay. I'm intrigued. How is it different?
The motion dives deep into the historical context of presidential elections.
Okay.
It makes a very bold claim. No president in the history of the United States has ever done what Trump is accused of doing here.
So they're saying that because it's unprecedented, it can't be considered a legitimate presidential act. That seems like a tough argument to make.
It is a bold claim, but their reasoning is quite nuanced. They're arguing that Trump's pressure on Pence, combined with all his other actions, went so far beyond the bounds of typical presidential behavior that it can't be seen as a legitimate exercise of his authority.
So it's not just about the act itself, but about the intent behind it and whether that intent was truly aligned with his duties as president or driven by personal motives.
That's exactly right. And this is where things get really interesting, because the motion raises a fundamental question about the nature of power. Can you truly separate a president's personal desires from their official actions? Where do you draw that line?
It's almost like trying to untangle a giant knot, except this knot has the potential to impact how we understand the presidency itself.
You're exactly right. And that's why this case and this motion specifically are so captivating, because they force us to grapple with these fundamental questions about power, accountability, and the very foundation of our democracy.
So if the courts ultimately side with the prosecution and say, yes, these actions were taken by Trump as a private citizen, not as president, what happens then? What does that mean for this case and for future presidencies?
Well, if the judge accepts the prosecution's argument, it would remove a major legal obstacle for the case moving forward.
Right.
It would mean that Trump could be tried in a criminal court, just like any other private citizen.
And that would be a huge deal, right? Because it would set a precedent that a president isn't above the law, even for actions taken while in office.
Exactly. It would send a clear message that there are limits to presidential power, and that exceeding those limits, even in pursuit of personal interests, can have serious consequences.
It makes you wonder what this could mean for future presidents. Would they be more cautious knowing that their actions could be subject to this level of scrutiny?
That's certainly a possibility.
This
case has the potential to redefine the scope of presidential immunity and force future presidents to think twice before taking actions that could be perceived as exceeding their constitutional authority.
It's a lot to unpack. So to bring it all back to the motion itself, what happens next? What are the next steps in this legal battle?
Right now, the ball is in the judge's court, so to speak.
Okay.
They have to review all the evidence, consider the arguments made by both sides, and then issue a ruling.
And based on that ruling, the case will either proceed toward a trial or potentially hit a dead end.
Exactly. It's a crucial juncture in the case, and the judge's decision could have far-reaching implications, not just for Trump, but for the future of the presidency itself.
It's a lot to think about. This whole deep dive has been a real eye-opener in terms of understanding the complexities of presidential power and the limits of immunity.
I agree. It's a reminder that our democracy is a delicate balance of power, and that it requires constant vigilance and a clear understanding of the rules to ensure that it remains strong.
Well said. And on that note, we'll leave it there for today. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the intricacies of presidential immunity, and be sure to tune in next time as we continue to explore the most fascinating and thought-provoking topics of our time.